Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Purveyor of urban cool, witty chronicler of the me decade and the cultural satirist who many call the heir to Dorothy Parker, Fran Lebowitz remains one of the foremost advocates of the extreme statement. Her writing is pointed, taut, and economical, and she's equally forthright, irascible, and unapologetically opinionated. Her first two classic books of essays, Metropolitan Life and Social Studies, have been collected in the Fran Lebowitz Reader. She's also the author of a children's book. She recently broke a 10-year writer's block and is back at work on her novel, a documentary film about Fran Lebowitz public speaking, directed by Martin Scorsese, premiered on HBO in November of 2010. She will be at the Mahaley Theater in conversation with me on Saturday, August 9th, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Fran Lebowitz to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's very nice to have you aboard. It'll be very nice doing this event with you. This is the kind of event you do, right? You have done this sort of thing in the past.
I have done this sort of thing since I was 27 years old.
And what do you enjoy about it?
People asking me questions. This was my childhood dream. Since when you were a child in the 50s, as I was, no one ever posed a question to a child. All children got were really directives. Now, of course, people ask their children everything, which I find stunning and which I look upon with some envy, I have to say. So when you do this kind of thing, that's what people are doing, asking you questions.
Why do you think, and I have a sense to the answer here, but why do you think people are so interested in your answer, in what you have to say, the answer to their question?
It's really been my experience that mostly what people are trying to prompt from me is a funny answer. Perhaps they're really interested in my opinions, which, you know, something I would like them to be. But mostly because sometimes the questions are so ludicrous, you know, that you can only imagine that that's the point of asking them.
So,
I mean, in my whole lifetime of doing this, you know, I have actually a favorite question that was asked of me, if you'd like to hear it.
I would love to hear it, of course.
Right. During the Iranian hostage crisis, which perhaps you're too young to recall.
Not at all.
Which was the... Obviously, the worst thing about it was for the hostages, but the second worst thing was that it initiated 24-hour news. By way, I mean the entire country was riveted by this. And in San Francisco at a college, I think it might have been Berkeley. I can't remember really. I know that people who live in Berkeley don't think Berkeley, San Francisco, but too bad. Someone actually asked me, who's your favorite hostage?
So... Are you speechless at that point, or do you come up with an answer?
Well, but I remember my answer only because I remember the question, because this went on for so long, and because they couldn't, you know, interview the hostages, since, you know, that would be the definition of the word hostage, the members of the families of the hostages became known to the country. And I said I didn't have a favorite hostage, but that I had a least favorite hostage wife. Whose name I actually remember, but I will not tell you.
No need to do that here. When you go out and you do this kind of thing, it would seem then that the world that we live in, where opinion is offered quite liberally, you can do it on social media. You can do it in a blog. You can do it even in an op-ed piece or an editorial or a column. You have always chosen to sort of go to the people.
Yes, well, because all those other forms you mentioned require writing.
But you're good at that.
At which?
At writing.
Yes, well, you know, I can't say I'm not good at writing, but I can say that I find it much easier to talk. Because what I'm not good at is working.
Have you made a career of that, of sort of not working?
It seems, yes. I mean, of course, this was not my intent, you know. But this seems to have been how it's largely worked out. And so although, you know, people who do talk for a living, like perhaps you, do, I guess, think of it as work. You have to admit, it's not coal mining.
No, it is not.
Which writing is.
Yes, and I wouldn't often think of it as work. So, because people are fascinating, when you're talking to people, it's fascinating. So, when I think of you, and I've been such a fan of your work for so long, and I think of You know, the obvious question, of course, is what is your relationship now with writing? As I mentioned in the introduction, it seems that you've returned to the novel. So are you at a comfortable place now?
No. I think that probably that would always be my answer to that question.
Okay.
Even physically at the moment, I'm not in a very comfortable place. No. I would say that my relationship to writing is exactly the relationship I had with homework, you know, when I was a kid. You know, and pretty much like when I was a kid, I don't do it enough. The difference is that I don't get grounded the way I used to. But the reason I think I have this antipathy to writing, frankly, is just because it's hard and because I am by nature slothful.
So when Metropolitan Life and Social Studies were born, were they easier? Were they still pains
to write?
They
weren't easier, but I was, you know, extremely young, you know. I was so young, really, when I wrote some of those things, that I was just happy it wasn't algebra. So I'm so long from algebra that, you know, that can no longer be a reason to write.
When you started to go out, as you mentioned, like 27 years old, when you would go out and talk to people, it was in multiple forms, right? I mean, you would go out to colleges. We would see you on Letterman. In fact, there were some of my favorite appearances of seeing you talk to David Letterman.
Well, thank you. Well, I still do television. I mean, I do, you know, I do colleges, you know. And when I started doing colleges, I was 27, so I wasn't so much older than the kids. You know, now I'm, you know, beyond older than they are. But I can't say that I really liked them any better then. Because even though I was 27, I was never, ever as young as the people who were in college were.
Right.
You know, and that has, of course, not changed. Television's the easiest thing to do. If you live in New York, because it's mostly in New York. If not, it's in Los Angeles, which if you happen to be in Los Angeles, is not that hard. Colleges are, as you may know, all over the place. and so my main objection to them is they have to fly to them. You know, I mean, we have some colleges here, but not a sufficient amount to enable you to pay rent in New York.
Keep you going.
Yeah. I mean, I would rather, and I'm certain that most people who do this kind of thing would rather do what are called corporate dates. And that's mostly because they pay about 50 million times more. I get very few of these because no matter how old I get, I never get old enough for that, apparently.
When you talk about the college audiences and sort of never being their age, would indicate a term that my mother always used, which was, oh, she's an old soul.
Well, that's a very nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
I didn't finish high school. I got expelled and I left home at a very young age and, you know, how to support myself from a very young age. And so I suppose that I just think that there's a quality of indolence, not my kind of indolence, but, you know, and also of the expectation that they have, which I don't think I did have. And until recently, I lived in a neighborhood that someone, not me, although I wish it was me, called NYU-istan. and the main bad thing about living in that neighborhood was having to overhear their conversations, you know, as you walked around. And I would walk around, and all I could think of was I just felt like constantly interrupting them and saying, no, 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 you won't. No, that's not going to happen to you. Guess what? Nope. No, you're not. Mostly I kept this to myself. I can't say always, but mostly I did.
But with that said, colleges still want you to come, and you are still read by many people, but the book is in so many college bookstores. You are someone that still speaks to that generation.
Yes, you know, this is something that really eluded me, especially when that movie that Marty made came out, because
right.
HBO, unbeknownst to me, but especially because this revelation came to me before Glenn Greenwald, HBO can tell, if they want to, exactly who's watching HBO. You know, that little box, you know, goes both ways, apparently.
Right.
And someone, one of the executives at HBO said to me, do you know that, you know, like 90% of the people watching your movie are of college age? And I said, no, how would I know that? And how would you know that? Which then they told me how they know that, and now you know that. I said to a friend of mine, I don't understand why this is, because I've never made any effort toward this age group. I just don't care. I don't have children. That's just one of the perks. And this friend of mine said to me, are you kidding? I said, why do they? Like when she said, are you kidding? You blame everything on their parents. Which, of course, I blame everything on their parents, who are, you know, mostly around my age.
Right.
And, of course, you know, that's just logical, because people my age are in charge of everything. So if you want to know whose fault it is, that's whose fault it is. No matter what it is, that's whose fault it is. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. Congress, yes, that's who it, you know. There are some people older than me and some people in power that are younger than me, but they all live in San Francisco. And in that case, it's their fault.
How do you prepare for what we're going to do at the Mahewi?
I pack.
Okay, you pack.
Yes, I don't prepare at all.
Okay, so you're just open and whatever.
I don't prepare at all. I really enjoy doing this. This is actually something that I would do for recreation if I could afford it. I really enjoy doing it, but I never prepare for it. And the reason that I do that, you know, do it with people, you know, first someone interviewing me, you know, journalists usually, you know, and then the audience is asking me questions, is because it's fun.
Right.
It's actually a fun activity. And I like the fact that I don't know what people are going to ask me. I never allow anyone to show me questions in advance. This is as good a time as any to say that I never allow mics in the audience. Because when there are mics in the audience, what you get from the audience are not questions, they're answers.
Right.
You know? I mean, I went last night to see Wally Shawn and Jonathan Demme and stuff talk about the movie that they have out. And there were mics in the audience. And people got up and they talked for like 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, so that, but I, you know, I like not knowing. Because then you might get a question like, who's your favorite hostage?
And you come to that with, as you mentioned this earlier, that many people are looking for a humorous answer. But do you try to also give the truth and give your opinion on certain issues and matters?
Well, to me, there's not a distinction between the truth and my opinion.
True.
You know, yes, I don't try to give the truth. I give the truth.
Right.
You know, I know people now say the truth as I know it, you know, but to me there's actually such a thing as, oh, the truth.
It's as simple as that. It's the truth.
Yes.
But you don't have that obligation to be funny. You don't mind just sharing the truth.
I don't. Unfortunately, the truth is often, you know, horribly amusing. You know? I really, you know, truthfully, I don't think about it. I think what I like about, one of the things I like about doing it is it's not, whatever thought process it requires it passes me by. You know, it's just like a reflex, you know, which is the opposite of writing.
Does it take you away from writing? Is it ever, or is it a muse in any way, a way of thinking of things to write about?
It's unrelated.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems unrelated to me. You know, my problems with writing have nothing to do with a lack of material.
But you would think that maybe you would come back and say, oh, this seems to be striking a chord with people. Maybe I can address this.
I'm really not a public service. You know, I have to tell you. The only time I really think of the audience is when I'm actually in front of an audience. You know, I mean, I certainly, when I write, I never think, I know this is the thing you're not supposed to do, but I never think about the reader. You know, I just don't. You know, I don't think about the reader. I don't, you know, that's up to them.
And the audience?
That's different because they're there. And well, because you know, you see them. You know why they're, when you see a person, you can know exactly why they're asking you that question.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's, you know, it's very often the question that they are asking you is really about them. It's just like life.
I know Steve Martin told me that we did a similar event that you and I are going to be doing, and he said that to me, that most people, when they come up and they ask a question to you, they are ultimately telling you a story about them.
Yes, well, that's a nice way of putting it.
I think I cleaned that up, but yes.
Yeah.
But you still enjoy doing it. Because sometimes those can be awkward, the Q&A portion.
But not for me.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone thinks they're going to make it awkward for me, they're disabused of that.
You're pretty comfortable with awkward.
Yeah, I don't mind at all.
Well, Fred Lebowitz will be at the Mahewi Performing Arts Center at Great Barrington, Massachusetts, in conversation with me on Saturday, August 9th. Fran Lebowitz, I can't wait to share a stage with you and watch you at work. It'll be an incredible experience, and I thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Well, thank you. I look forward to it.
A delight. Thank you. Again, Fran Lebowitz will be at the Mehewi Performing Arts Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, in conversation on Saturday, August 9th, mehewi.org for more information, mehewi.org for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.